Hello there.
Tonight, I again proudly accept that nomination for President of the United States.
I have a bad feeling about this.
But when the President does it, that means that it is not illegal.
What?
Welcome to the joy of Star Wars. We are back. After what must have been close to 12 parsecs away, we have returned. And as always, I'm joined by my lovely co-hosts, the Yoda and Yaddle of Star Wars podcasting, Vaughn and Steele. Hi, guys.
I'm Yaddle.
Yes, you are.
Hi, Simon.
Hi. Backwards. We have been away for a while, as we joked in just before we started recording. We may have been frozen in carbonite, but we are back. And we are easing ourselves back into the world of Star Wars podcasting by doing a deep dive episode on episode 6, Return of the Jedi. Very exciting stuff. So before we get into all the categories that we have and the normal malarkey that comes with a deep dive episode, I just thought we'd start by getting a starter for 10 on this. So guys, what's your relationship to this movie, and has it changed with all the Star Wars media that's come out, the sequel films, the prequel TV shows, etc., in the years since you first saw it? Steele, do you want to kick us off?
So when I was a kid, Return of the Jedi was my favorite, because Luke is my favorite character, and this is the one where he's just like kicking ass and taking names. Like, he's just chopping wood left, right, and center with that lightsaber, you know. I love everything they do with Luke in this movie. I always did. As I got a bit older, I realized that Empire was the superior film. And also the original was also the superior film, but it still gives me so much childish wonder watching this film. And not that it's, you know, not still good, because it is, it's still brilliant. But it's definitely my big child. If I want to feel like a kid again, that's the one I'll watch.
And yourself, Mom?
Yeah, I find that interesting because I also really loved it as a child. Not for Luke though, mainly because of the Ewoks, because I really fell for that toy merchandising trap. I don't think I ever had any Ewok toys, but I really loved the Ewoks.
Wait, are you saying that you fell for something that was intentionally made cutesy to sell and cater to people so they'd buy them?
Yes, I did a capitalism.
You did a capitalism.
And I hated myself for it ever since. That's why I'm a socialist now.
You're a socialist with an obsession with Grogu.
He's so cute. Just really
and Disney socialist.
After we finished watching Book of Boba Fett, I turned around and I was like, okay, here was all my problems with the show, and Vaughn was just like, but Grogu was in it and he was cute and he fell asleep.
His little tiny chainmail. It was so cute. What are we talking about? Return of the Jedi. Yeah, I love this movie.
I'd like to, anyone who's new to the show, I'd like to introduce Vaughn, our professional historian who is on this show and who brings a wealth of experience and cooing at Baby Yoda. She is going to be utterly professional on this show. And yes, for the next 2, 3, 6 hours, I'm not quite sure, you can expect no giggling at all between my two co-hosts who do not enjoy spending any time together, as you can tell.
No, not at all.
Not in the slightest.
For reference, watch the Kenobi episode. Listen to the Kenobi episode.
Oof. Yes.
Unless you're looking to employ me, don't listen. Don't listen to the Kenobi episode then.
Okay, so my co-host.
Have you ever seen this movie?
Have I seen? Yes, I think so. This is the, I think this is the one that goes pew pew. Yeah. Is that the one?
Yeah. Get that Sheevus, kill that Sheevus.
No, I've seen this film a few times, which leads us on to our first category, which is when did you first see this film? I suppose to take a step back, my relationship to this hasn't really changed, only because I haven't seen this film as much as I've seen the other two films for some reason, or I don't remember it as well. So watching it last night did feel like a little bit like rediscovering it to some degree. I mean, I've seen the film plenty of times, but it's been a little while since I last saw it. And as someone who isn't as devoted to Star Wars as you guys, you know, I didn't remember every single beat of the plot. So I really enjoyed it. I do think of those three films, because I came to them later, as we all did, as almost one big giant film in a way. And so it's the three original films are closer together as a trilogy than I think of, say, the sequel films, which I think of as individual films and individual things. I know it was kind of designed as a trilogy, but they were kind of written apart and things like that. But I do sort of take the story and the characters across those three, for better or for worse, as a kind of continued trilogy. And yeah, it's just so much fun. I do have some notes around some stuff which I don't think works as well in this film as the other two original films. But I was surprised by just how good the action was, how clear it was, and how good it still looked. Like, it's a really beautiful looking film. So yeah, there's a lot to dive into. As I say, the first category is when we first saw this film. For me, as I mentioned on the other two deep dives we've done, I would have seen this film round about Christmas time, I assume, probably playing on British television on ITV. The films tended to play sort of back-to-back-to-back days. And I remember just falling in love with those three films and just thinking how beautiful they looked and how interesting they were. I did come to it, I think, after I saw episode one in the cinema with my mum, and she was very confused by everything. But 4, 5, and 6, I would have seen a little bit later on TV and just thinking they were great. You guys, I don't know if there's anything specific around when you guys first saw this film.
Wait, so you watched Phantom Menace first?
Yes, that's why I'm such a big prequels head.
You poor, poor thing. we end up mentioning it quite a lot, the ITV reruns that they do. So that and Harry Potter, isn't it? So for me, there's not a point that I can remember where I hadn't seen this movie. I think I've got an early memory of watching it, but I'd already seen it before. I knew that because I knew that the Emperor was coming with his shooty lightning, and I needed my mum to be in the room with me when that happened, when I was about 4 or 3. I think it was before I went to school, so I must have been 3. And when the Emperor was shooting his lightning and Luke was getting absolutely wrecked, I was just like, "Mum, this is terrifying. Please, can you just join me for this bit?" But I have a very clear memory of watching all of the special edition VHSs back to back one day when my brother was at school and it was just me and my mum in the house. And I remember I'd definitely seen them before because I knew everything that was going to happen. So I'd watched them multiple times before then, but that's as far back as I can remember. So for me, Star Wars exists earlier than memory for me.
Love that. I don't remember the first time I saw this. I would have been young, maybe 5 or 6 or so. Because I'm pretty sure I saw Empire first while I was standing in the hallway watching, while my dad was watching it. And then, yeah, I think shortly after that, he probably showed me episode 6. But yeah, I feel like it's a film that I've just always known. So I don't really have a very particular memory of seeing it for the first time, but always loving it.
Because you had your VHS box set, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, the special gold box.
Yes, the farting box.
Yes.
Yes, the farting box has become a sort of key part of this this category, actually, which is quite sad because this will be the last time we'll get to discuss the farting box as part of this category. So that's a sad moment that we're going to move past that, but we have to kind of keep in mind that the next time we do a deep dive, it will be about episode 1. So that is something to look forward to.
It's okay, Simon. We'll just call you the farting box from now on.
Thank you, Steele. I'm not regretting doing this series with you. Right. And okay.
Back, baby.
I missed you guys.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, moving on. So the next category is reviews and box office. And from doing a little bit of research, the reviews for this were still pretty good, although a little bit softer than the first two films. Roger Ebert gave this 4 out of 4 stars and called it a complete entertainment, a feast for the eyes, and a delight for the fancy. It's a little amazing how Lucas and his associates keep topping themselves. So he very much enjoyed it. James Harwood of Variety was a little bit more mixed and said it's a visual treat throughout. And this might be a bit controversial. What do you guys think? But thought that Hamill is not enough of a dramatic actor to carry the plot load here. And Harrison Ford is present more in body than in spirit this time, given little to do but react to special effects. And it can't be said that either Carrie Fisher or Billy Dee Williams rise to previous efforts. But Lucas and director Richard Marquand have overwhelmed these performance flaws with a truly amazing array of creatures, old and new, plus the familiar space hardware. Any thoughts on that?
I do think the thing about Han being only there in body more than spirit is... Yeah, Harrison Ford definitely phones this one in a little bit.
He does.
I love it though. I love his performance in this because it really reminds me of one of my best friends, actually. While I was watching it, I was like, oh my God, Dom is Harrison Ford. But he's just like kind of wacky, like in body, especially when he's like running out of the comm station when it's about to blow up and he's just kind of flailing around. I've never really noticed how much he is flailing, but it's an excellent scene. And I love just how he plays this whole film.
Yeah, I did one of the notes I have for later in the film is I think there is some actively bad acting in one scene between Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford, unfortunately. I don't know what you guys think about Mark Hamill not being...
Is that the scene where Luke's just gone off to go and face Vader, and it's just a really awkward, that whole scene is just really awkward. Yes, that's the bit where she goes, if you can feel his presence, then leave this place.
Yes, I think it was that one. I think it's the one where she hasn't told him they're related yet, and so he's kind of in huff or whatever. I watching that last night, that scene, I was like, yeah, that's not actually very good, unfortunately. I don't know what you guys think about Mark Hamill not being a dramatic enough actor to pull this off. Looking at this last night, I didn't think Mark Hamill was, like, I didn't think he stood out as being particularly good, and I kind of get what they're saying. I've never felt like any of the Mark Hamill stuff has been particularly, like, outstanding in any of the original trilogy, so I never watched the films been thinking, oh, like, he is... like the driving force off this. It's more so that things sort of happen and he's, you know, a presence involved in it, rather than say Harrison Ford in the original, where you can actually see someone embodying a role and, you know, being someone who stands out. I don't know what you guys think about Hamill in the original trilogy.
I think you should shut your mouth when talking about God. That's offensive. I'll have you know. No, I know what you mean. In some ways, I think I disagree, especially in this film. I feel like he's on point playing the version of Luke that's more in control of things. Mm-hmm. I just think he's so cool, even with that terrible haircut. He is so cool. And it's just chopping wood, just left, right, and center. I love it. I will say that I think Mark Hamill's best performance is in The Last Jedi. I think he's just astonishingly good in that. Like, I think he's wonderful. But yeah, I get that. I'm just going back to that review and saying about saying that Billy Dee didn't bring a strong performance, because I just think just everything that he's in, he's wonderful. Like he has
Yeah, that's an absurd criticism.
I think he has the best he has some of the best stuff in the film. Like his reactions to things going on in the battle when he's in the Falcon with Nien Num, who looks like a short stack of pancakes. Those reactions are some of the best stuff in the movie, I think, where he's like, what do you mean? How could they, if they don't know we're coming? And then that realization is brilliant. I flumped that quote a little bit, but hey ho.
The one thing that Billy Dee does that I do hate a little bit is when they're in Jabba's palace and he lowers his mask so that you can yes. tell it's him. Oh, it's so bad. I hate it so much.
That is a good one.
Hamill, though, I do understand, like, there are some points where it seems a little wooden, his character, but I do think it really fits for what... This is such a common critique of Star Wars films that people don't like, quote unquote, how it was acted, but it's like what the characters would be doing in that instance. Like, that is how the characters would be reacting or not reacting or saying something. And I think that it's like a failure of understanding what the role is rather than the actor not performing well enough. That's what I think about that criticism.
Fair enough. Okay, so last couple points on this. Box office, Return of the Jedi grossed $309.3 million in the United States.
It broke box office records. It was, I think it was, I just watched, I was on the way here, I was watching a documentary on the bus here because, you know, and I think its opening weekend was like a million, it was like the highest opening weekend in history. It was like $1 million more than the previous. Which is pretty wild.
Well, can you imagine the excitement after episode 5 and just how big a cultural thing that was, you know, with the, you know, I am your father and all this stuff, you know. So
this is speaking of the hype, this is a good point to mention something we literally just saw before we got into the Zoom call, mm-hmm. where a couple got married in the queue for Return of the Jedi. And they were in costume.
Cosplay, yeah. It's very sweet.
How sweet.
It is very cute.
Very sweet. So 166 in the worldwide territories, giving $475.3 million against a production budget of 32.5. So obviously huge gains there. It received 4 Oscar nominations, Best Art Direction for Set Decoration, Best Sound, Best Effects for Sound Effects Editing, and Best Music for Original Score. And it won a Special Achievement Award for Best Effects. And I've got a note here that says no Oscar nomination for Salacious B. Crumb, which seems like a mistake.
Huge mistake.
Very upsetting that we didn't have a special Salacious B. Crumb category created just for that year's Oscars. Right, production and casting notes. There's quite a few things here. I don't know what you guys had, but just kind of the basics for myself. George Lucas financed the film himself again, just like with the other films. Lucas originally wanted to hire Steven Spielberg to direct, but couldn't because of a dispute with the Directors Guild. He then went to David Lynch and David Cronenberg, but they declined, which is really interesting when you think of all the sort of creatures and the worlds that inhabit in this film, how they may have taken that forward. They ended up with Richard Marquand, as I mentioned earlier, who had less experience with the visual effects, but was considered good with the actors. Lucas was on set quite a bit during this. I think he might have directed some of the sort of B-team footage as well. And I think he was involved quite a lot with the special effects due to his kind of being more experienced than the director. And Mark Rand had a quote that said, "It is rather like trying to direct King Lear with Shakespeare in the next room," which is a nice way of thinking about that. And probably the sort of big thing from a casting point of view is the fact that we did have Harrison Ford's Han Solo return after sort of being up in the air after the end of the episode 5. There was kind of question over whether or not he would return. And when he eventually did, there was questions of whether or not Han Solo would actually be killed off during the film itself. And Harrison Ford had suggested that Han Solo would be killed sort of in a self-sacrifice kind of moment. But That was rejected by George Lucas, and there had been some suggestions that in part that was rejected because that wouldn't sell many toys if you had a dead hero. So I don't know if you guys got any more notes on the production. The only final one I've got is that they had some trouble with some of the post-production sound not being able to sort of hear properly, especially when it would go out to cinemas. So off the back of that, they actually created the THX company, the one that does high fidelity audio. That was actually off the back of the issues they were having with Return of the Jedi and not being able to reproduce the sound correctly in venues. So another just casual thing that kind of came about from this Lucas trilogy of things, that we got another sort of technical innovation off the back of that. Any other notes on this category, guys?
If we're talking about effects, and I think a big one is this is the first film where someone has a green lightsaber. Mm. And it was originally going to be blue. In some of the really old trailers, there's the scenes of him on Jabba's sail barge swinging the lightsaber around, and it's a blue lightsaber. And they changed it to green just because in the Jabba sail barge scene, the sky in that scene was too blue.
Mm.
It was so bright and so blue that they were worried it wouldn't show up, so they changed it to green. And that's why we have green lightsabers. Of course, in the canon, it means something completely different. But that was written years later by someone in a handbook somewhere.
Very good. Okay. Sorry, Vaughn, on you go.
Yeah, Simon Root. This was the first one that had a majority of scenes shot in the U.S.
Mm.
Interesting.
Yep.
And this one, I want to shout out to Marsha Lucas, because she is like not ever referenced enough or mentioned enough. Marsha was the editor on the first Star Wars, and she also did several Scorsese films.
The savior of the first Star Wars film.
Yeah.
The editing was a huge part of it.
She won an Oscar for it for the first Star Wars. She edited Taxi Driver also in 76 and American Graffiti, which is also a Lucas film, in 73. And she guided a lot of the decisions on Star Wars in the original trilogy. And it took a toll on her marriage with George. And they got divorced during the production of Return of the Jedi because it was just not working for her. And I think it's a real tragedy that she really is the savior of Star Wars, of original Star Wars. And she doesn't get the credit she deserves. So they kept the divorce quiet until after the release of Return of the Jedi. And she got a hefty divorce settlement, but then she left editing and left the business after being like on the top of the game, editing for Scorsese and Lucas, winning an Oscar. And she just left all of it behind after this. So I think that's a tragedy, and she deserves better.
Well, she gets the respect she deserves on this show, at least.
Yes.
Okay. Moving on to opening crawl. So marks out of 10 on what we think of the opening crawl. And Steele, would you mind reading it out? I've sent a link in the chat there. You can look it up yourself. Personally, I thought 8 out of 10. I thought it was good, but just not as iconic as the first two crawls. I don't know about you guys.
Again, excited to give your opinion there, Simon. I haven't even read it yet.
Well, 10 out of 10 would be your performance, of course. But
thank you. Watch me get a Razzie nominated performance now. I was thinking, since this is the first one with Sheev in, for those who don't know, Sheev is Emperor Palpatine's first name, his Christian name. And so this is Sheev doing it. Opening crawl, colon. Sorry.
Luke Skywalker has returned to his home planet of Tatooine in an attempt to rescue his friend Han Solo from the clutches of the vile gangster Jabba the Hutt. Little does Luke know that the Galactic Empire, that's me, guys, has secretly begun construction on a new armored space station, even more powerful than the first dreaded Death Star. When completed, this ultimate weapon will spell certain doom for the small band of rebels struggling to restore freedom to the galaxy.
Phenomenal.
Thank you.
Words don't do that justice, Steel. I mean, a score out of 10 would be good, since we're on that category and your guys are certainly not saying anything, but you know.
Oh my god, Simon. Come on, like 9.
9, yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. It has that, it still has that proper Flash Gordon kind of like serial, like popping up, telling you exactly what's happening. It's not until the next one when they start getting weird with that. But I like it. I like that I think only Galactic Empire is in capitals in this one. And it's just like Galactic Empire. And I love that. It's a good one. And I like that the first words in it are Luke Skywalker, which is always fun. I think it's, I'm sorry, I've, after the episode 9 crawl, it's just everything else just seems so good.
Was it the dead live or something?
Dead speak.
The dead speak.
Exclamation mark.
Someone said that Palpatine invented podcasting, which is a nice way to think about it.
Hey, guys.
doing little ad reads in between.
This podcast is sponsored by Squarespace.
Beautiful. Okay. This next category might take a while. I wrote favorite moment or scene. I ended up kind of writing, just going through kind of most of the things that happen in the film, just so we could go through that. I can quickly move through this list if you want, and then you guys can either just shout out and stop me if we hit one that's good, or you can wait till the end. It's up to you guys. But so from the start, we have
Diamond, stop.
Okay, thanks, Dale. This is that's productive. So we have the opening, and we have Lord Vader's shuttle approaching the new Death Star, and then onto the Death Star we have middle manager Vader.
You're going scene for scene.
Middle manager Vader shouting at his underlings about Big Daddy Palpy's imminent arrival. Then I had a note down that says two gay robots in the desert with C-3PO and R2-D2 on their way to Jabba's palace and Tatooine, and then everything with Jabba. We have the desert escape scene with Jabba in Tatooine, and we'll get into more detail in that little bit. We have Luke and R2-D2 going to the Dagobah system, and then we have the new and improved Death Star with Palpy coming aboard with his little red guys, which is cool. We have Yoda and Luke on Dagobah system, and then I believe that's when Obi-Wan Kenobi appears. We have on the main Rebel ship the discussion of the attack plans amongst the Rebel gang. Then the gang go to Endor, including the forest racing and meeting the Ewoks. Palpy and Vader are chatting shit about Luke on the Death Star. Some nice bitching there. Back on Endor with the gang, we have the gang being captured by the Ewoks, and then them thinking C-3PO is a god. We have Luke telling Leia they're related. Luke surrenders to the stormtroopers and meets up with Darth Vader. The attack by the rebels and the Ewoks on the control bunker on Endor. Darth, Luke, and Palpy in Death Star 2.0. Admiral Akbar and Lando's attempt an attack on Death Star 2.0, but the Protector's shield is still up, so that doesn't go so well. Back on Endor, the gang are captured by the space Nazis, and the Ewoks lead the attack to defeat them. And then we kind of have this three ongoing narrative structure with the Endor with the Wookiees, we have the space battle with Lando, and we have Darth versus Luke while Palpy watches on with great glee. Then we have the shield is eventually brought down, Luke defeats Darth, Palpy attacks Luke, Darth kills Palpy, and then the Death Star is destroyed. Leia and Han have a moment, and he's my brother kind of scene. And then Luke burns Vader's body, which I have a question here. Is that maybe the best shot of the film? And then celebrations throughout the galaxy, including Ewok dancing. So that's very quickly me moving through the whole film. Guys, what's your favorite part?
I can't wait to hear one of your summaries for Mad Max Fury Road. That would be incredible. They drive in a direction, and then halfway through they turn around, and then they come back.
I mean, that is kind of the summary of the film, which is a lot of cool shit happens in between all that. So.
Yeah, literally. Your quick summary just got me thinking about all the Lego sets that I wanted as a kid. So when Big Daddy Palps arrives...
Let's not make that a thing. I don't like that.
So when Senpai Palpy... When he arrives and puts his dummy thick self onto the Death Star, he That was a Lego set called Imperial Inspection, and it came with the Lambda shuttle. It came with a little like ground crew bit, and it came with two stormtroopers, two Imperial guards, Vader and the Emperor, and a couple other characters. And it was just like, it blew my mind when I was like 9. It was just incredible, and I think about it often. It's a beautiful thing that the Vader arriving on his shuttle is also, that's the first time they ever used the Lambda shuttle design, and it's one of the best in Star Wars. I love it so much. I love the wings, how they unfold and fold, and it's just incredible. For me, I think my favorite bit in the film, it's probably the lightsaber fight between Vader and Luke, where Luke just like gives in and just beats his dad, just absolutely wails on him, and chops off his arm. That whole bit where he screams "Never!" and then just wails out, and that music, and like, this is the hero of our story triumphing over the villain in a sword fight and beating him, and it's, and the music they choose and the way they frame it, it's just such a dark moment, and it just seems like a loss more than a victory, and it's just, which of course it is in the scene, and it's just a brilliant, brilliant bit and a brilliant piece of music that I don't think is even on the soundtrack. But I just love it. It's so dark. It makes me feel things. I remember when I was a kid, I used to go on the Star Wars website all the time, because of course I did. And they had a bunch of different like browser games, and one of them was like, "Where's this music from?" And I remember it played little sections of the music. And when that bit played, I was like, "Oh, my feelings. I feel these things." And yeah, it's just wonderful, wonderful scene and wonderful piece of music.
My favorite is the party barge, I think. Because it's just, there's so much like happening, so much action. Luke is in his fancy little Chanel boots. It's delightful. I really enjoy it. I love R2 in all of those scenes. I love the whole like plot to get to that point of saving Han, where they all have to be captured in order to escape. I really love how calculated that is, and how Han says as soon as he wakes up, "Luke can't like save himself. How is he going to rescue me?" And then they all get captured, and Han's like, "I knew it, but like that's the plan." It's such a carefully constructed plan to like send in the droids first, and then send in Leia as bounty hunter, and then send in Luke. Like, it's just so well done. I really enjoy it.
I think it was a really weird plan, to be honest.
Oh, it's elaborate as fuck, but Skywalkers, especially male Skywalkers, are the most dramatic people in the entire galaxy.
That is true, actually.
So it is the perfect Skywalker plot to save someone.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah. They are dramatic bitches.
It's they are true. Messy.
They are, and that's why we love them. I it's hard to pick one particular scene or moment. Like I said, I did really like the end with the move from Luke burning Vader's body. Is a great shot of like the torch kind of moving past the camera, and then lighting sort of the Viking burial type approach to burning the body, and sort of looking on from there, which I think is just a really beautiful shot. And then the sort of fun ending where we have the party throughout the galaxy and the Ewoks dancing. It's a fun way to end the trilogy. Right, okay, worst scene or moment. I didn't have a lot. I really enjoyed the film. I don't know if it's particularly the worst, but it did kind of stand out, all the sort of special edition CGI bullshit that sort of gets added in. And
oh god,
watching this on Disney Plus, you kind of got a lot of like, oh yeah, this is what George was doing in the 90s or whatever. We have Anakin's Force Ghost replacing the original actor with Hayden Christensen.
So bad.
And then this may be controversial, but I didn't particularly enjoy Palpy in this film, so I find him just quite annoying and dull. So
you didn't enjoy the Emperor in Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, he's just like, this is exactly as I planned, everything is going as I ordered, this is great, and then he just gets thrown down a well, and it's like, okay, cool.
How dare you?
Simon, why do you fucking host a Star Wars podcast? I don't understand this. Like,
I said, I really enjoyed the film. What more do you want? I can dislike a character.
No, you can't. Not when it's Palpatine.
Unless it's episode 9.
No,
I get it, I guess, but I think he's wonderful in this. But that's also the point, that like you're supposed to think that he is the most like pompous asshole in the galaxy who thinks that he is infallible because he's evil. And he's like, oh, the evil side will help me. It's good. We're all good. And then goodness triumphs. That's the whole point. The reason you don't like him is the point of the film.
No, you can dislike characters and think they're well written or interesting. I don't think he was either of those things, but that's okay. I mean,
I'm gonna get mad. Someone's gonna get stabbed.
No.
It's okay. You guys are allowed to bring critical thinking to Star Wars. You don't have to love everything George Lucas did.
Oh, I don't. Trust me.
I definitely don't.
Okay.
Also, the worst scene in this film is undoubtedly when they murder an Ewok and then another Ewok goes over to see if he's okay. It is heartbreaking. It's terrible.
That is tough.
Star Wars.
It really hurts.
Why would they do that?
It really hurts. He shakes his body.
He does.
Like, oh my God. Oh my God. It breaks my heart every time. It's just as bad as Mufasa.
Oh, it's worse than Mufasa.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was really sad when they stopped animating that drawing. No. right, okay. Are we, is there any more? Any more additions to this category?
That's a really interesting way to look at the miracle of animation. It's really sad when it stopped.
That's actually just a joke I stole from Friends, to be honest, but I thought it was funny. So there we go. Yes, it probably is worth mentioning, looking at it now and watching the Anakin Force Ghost at the end. It's, yeah, that's kind of tough to look at, to be honest.
That's the worst thing for me. I think that particular thing, like there's a couple weird ones, but nothing is that bad. Special edition change wise in Jedi, there's only a couple, like they give the Sarlacc pit a mouth, which is kind of weird. I just prefer the Salusi. I prefer the Salusi. So good. I went back in. You set me up for that. I couldn't resist. I'm sorry, Simon. This is a history podcast.
We bring great
things. Not today. not this one.
So, it was originally just a big hole in the ground with teeth. Mm. And they just kind of fell in steady. Steady on. Then they put the little beak in, and I kind of prefer it without, but it's fine. But the Hayden Christensen one is especially bad because they didn't even get Hayden Christensen in and put him in the robes and put him in the scene. They cut his head off a different scene and superimposed it onto Sebastian Shaw's body. It's really weird. And also, poor Sebastian Shaw, he deserves so much better. Like, and because I when I watch this film, I always watch the despecialized edition, which is a fan edit of the like the Blu-ray release to make it HD, but then edited to put the old stuff back in. And just having Sebastian Shaw, just this like old man who like you just saw him as a burnt up egg, and just seeing him as like a man again, like it just looks the same as he does, and he's smiling and he's just a happy old man, and it's just,
well, it's lovely as well, because obviously we see the original actor there, you know, having that moment with Luke as he's about to die, so it does undercut that fact that we then have a different actor playing him, you know, 5 minutes later or whatever it is. It kind of does take away from what we've just witnessed with those two actors having that moment together. So yeah,
it also like wouldn't immediately be self-evident to Luke, right?
No,
like, he doesn't know Hayden Christensen.
Who's this guy?
He's never met Hayden. Like, it doesn't really make sense unless you've seen the prequels.
I really like the idea that him coming back as Sebastian Shaw, and him not being scarred anymore and having hair and just like all those things. It's just like, you know, like all of the injuries, all of the horrible things that he went through as Vader, like they some of those things are healed, you know, and I just think that's beautiful. Speaking of that, when it's Hayden Christensen, because they just superimposed it from another scene, like he even still has the scar on his face and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, just George, like if you really want this, like if this is what you want to do, just don't be lazy about it and pay the extra money and get Hayden Christensen back, you know, give Hayden Christensen 50 grand. You've got it, you know, and get him in, get him to fly over and to Skywalker Ranch and get in the costume and just do it, you know.
Or, you know, go the other way and put him in the death scene instead. You know, don't be a coward, George. Come on, let's do it properly. Let's just replace the actor altogether.
Well, no. Absolutely.
No,
don't do that, actually.
No.
I just find that such a shame because, like, that actor, like, that's a part of that actor's legacy, you know?
And absolutely, yeah.
Gone. I feel the same way about the changing of, as much as I love Tamara Morrison, he's an absolute Chad. I love him, dad bod and all, he's wonderful. I really prefer that they'd have kept the original voice for Boba Fett in The Empire Strikes Back, because they changed it to Tamara Morrison to make it more sort of canonically accurate, which makes sense, but I really wish they hadn't done that, because the point of like cinema is, like, you watch something and you see how it was made at the time. Like, you see all those things. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the cinema, the point of cinema is you watch something.
Yeah, I was bracing for what you were going to say, the point of cinema.
No, it's not. One of the great things about, like, watching a film is you see how they did it then, and you see, like, if you see the cracks, you see the cracks because either a film was done not very well or it was a piece of its time, and that's important. Like, and I feel like covering those things up doesn't have to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. No, completely with you. I mean, George Lucas was one of the people that campaigned against colorizing old films, like, you know, Gone with the Wind or you know, whatever, you know, other films from the time, Casablanca, for instance. You know, they made a colorized version of Casablanca, and George was one of him, like Spielberg, they were against that because it's like you're just trampling on art with crayons, and it's like George 20 years later or whatever it was, he was just like, yeah, well, it's my art, so I can trample on it if I wish, and I'd have less of an issue if it wasn't like the definitive version. Like, if he wanted to put like a sort of DVD extra type cut that was out there in the world that he could feel quote unquote proud of, fair enough, but to just completely replace that as the canon, as you say, going forward, you know, 50 years from now, it'll be Hayden Christian's head there. They'll be floating around. It won't be the original actors, which I think, as you said, Steele, I think you put it really nicely. You know, that's a real shame because that's a legacy of that actor's career.
The so Blade Runner has a million different cuts because the theatrical cut was a big mess that was studio meddled. And then they released a director's cut later on. And then they did a God knows how many cuts after that. Yeah. And then they did the final cut. And the thing is, like, the final cut is supposed to be the definitive version, but you can still watch the director's cut or the theatrical cut. Like, the theatrical cut is on Amazon Prime right now. Like, you can just watch it. It's not good, like, but it's there. And the thing, that's just the thing that annoys me about Star Wars, is the only way to watch the unspecial edition, the theatrical release, is you either have one of the old VHSs. You're someone like me who's lucky enough to have the 2008 DVD release, where it came as a port of an old Laserdisc version of it, the second disc. So I have that. Or you watch the despecialized fan edits that fans of Star Wars put countless hours over a period of years making just to change, just to get rid of this stuff, to get the definitive experience. Like, the worst one for me is, like, most of the X-Wing fight from the last scenes in the original Star Wars, like, they've been replaced, like, almost completely, and it's horrible. Like, why would you do that? Those special effects won an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would you do that? I'm sorry, I'm not going to rant about the special edition the entire time when we talk about Return of the Jedi, but it just, oh, it's just why? Like, why not just have the original and the other cut out there? Like, I'd, like, if they were both there, I'd, you know, I'd be like, oh, I'll watch the special edition for a change, you know? It's like watching Lord of the Rings, watching the 4.5 hour cut or watching the theatrical cut, you know? Like, it depends how I feel. And I just feel like that's how it should be. And also, Disney would make an insane amount of money if they released the originals restored. Yeah. They can't because Lucas still has I think he has the distribution rights to the original first film still, and like they can't do anything. They can release it, but they can't change anything. Also, the McClunky line was a George Lucas thing. Like, he wanted that to be in the new Disney Plus release. Which is an interesting one. What are you doing? What are you doing, bro? Are you okay? You okay there?
Right. We should probably move on unless there's anything else to add in worst moment or scene, or maybe we can just quite rightly spend another couple of hours talking about CGI bullshit. But we should probably move on. The next scene, the next category I have is questions, issues, and mistakes. Now, the first one I have down here, it's not really any of those, but I just kind of want to call it out as something that's funny, which is Vader's over-the-top hand gestures in comparison to like his cool voice. And it's obviously something that goes on throughout the original trilogy, but I was just watching it last night, and it just kind of struck me that you had, you know, this cool in-command voice who's taking charge of the scene. And then you had these like really over-the-top hand gestures of like waving and pointing his finger at his underlings. I thought that was really funny. This is something that my lovely wife Ebba pointed out, which was during one of the scenes, one of the Ewoks appear to have a costume fail. We can see the human through the eye slot of one of the Ewoks, which was quite funny. I've got a note down here which says Stormtroop armor sucks. Just not useful at all. And then one question I had was, how come Palpatine wasn't able to save himself from Darth Vader? I'm sure there's a whole set of reasons why, and obviously for story reasons that had to happen, but watching it again, I was just like, yep, here he is, just getting tossed down the well. Any from yourself, guys?
Well, he didn't save himself because he had a whole plan to come back 30 years later
somehow
with a fleet. with the biggest fleet that there's ever been.
He was like, this is all part of my plan to conquer podcasting.
He was just busy podcasting on Fortnite.
He's like, I will defeat Joe Rogan.
There's that scene where what we mentioned before, if you can feel his presence, then leave this place. Mm. That whole scene is so wonky. And like, there's a really wonderful bit in that scene as well. Like the first half of the scene where he's talking to Leia and he says about my sister having the Force. And then he says, it's you, Leia. And that little reaction from her while the Luke and Leia theme plays, which was written just for that moment, which they bring back in The Last Jedi, which is gorgeous. That little moment is absolutely wonderful, and it really hits me. And then the really wonky stuff starts happening, and it's like, oh no. There's really not much. I think for me, the second act kind of meanders. Mm-hmm. They spend a lot of time farting around in the jungle. I can't really be a judge of that because I know this film off by heart, back to back. Like, I don't know why I said back to back. I mean, nothing like that. But I know this film so well. I've watched it since as long as I can remember. So the fact that the second act just kind of like meanders, like I don't care because that's how I know it goes. Mm-hmm. I feel like for a first watch, I feel like someone just watching that could probably be like, okay, this is getting on a bit, you know?
Yep. I assume you meant the back of your hand. I knew what you meant, Steel. You're good with me. That's fine. Okay. Vaughn, any thoughts on any questions, issues?
One thing came up for me that has nothing to do with this really, but was Warwick Davis in the prequels?
Yeah.
He was, right?
Warwick Davis was in Phantom Menace. He was chilling.
He was chilling
with Watto, watching things.
So then Warwick Davis, Anthony Daniels, and Ian McDermott have been in all three trilogies?
Mm-hmm.
Are they the only ones that have been in all three? Peter Mayhew wasn't in Force Awakens, was he?
Yeah, Peter Mayhew was. He did a couple of sitting down Falcon scenes in Force Awakens.
Okay.
Yeah, which is really lovely. I think he's
in the original, or the prequels.
I think a couple scenes. Yeah, I think he was. I think he was in Revenge of the Sith.
The droid attack on the Wookiees.
What about it?
Okay, that's what I was thinking while I was watching this, because it's really fortunate that Ian McDermott aged into his own role.
Yeah.
Like, that's really, really fantastic for him, because he was 39, I think, during Return of the Jedi. And then an older age during the prequels. Some sort of maths. I guess 59.
Yep.
It would have been about 20 years later. But yeah, that's what I was thinking for most of it. I do agree that the second act kind of meanders. They are in the jungle for a while, but I would watch Ewoks doing shit all day. I would, and I have.
Then watch...
I have.
Watch Caravan of Courage, you coward.
I have.
Yeah. Just probably worth bringing up now, I did go into the film this time around going, do I like Ewoks or not? And I watched the film. I thought, Ewoks fucking rock. They're great.
They fucking rock. They're Ewoks are so amazing. Cute. They have their adorable little yub-nub language. Like, they're fucking adorable. They have their great little music going on.
Yeah.
They host feasts.
Absolutely.
Feasts of probably stormtrooper flesh.
So eat the fucking rich and the Nazis. Go for it. Love you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we love the Ewoks. That's the official policy on this episode.
Big fan.
Right. Favorite planet.
Sorry. There is something, and that's that they let Boba Fett do absolutely nothing and get eaten by the Sarlacc.
What I was gonna say is they do change his voice in Empire. But they don't change it here because he has one yell when he's falling into the Sarlacc pit, and now it doesn't match any other Boba Fett. And it's very funny because it very clearly is not
Temuera Morrison.
Thank you. It's very clearly not him. So
he that character does suck in this film, I have to say. I don't want to be too rude.
Yeah, he does fuck all.
But have you ever seen the picture of what the guy that was wearing the Boba Fett suit in Return of the Jedi looked like, with his like this, like the guy, and he's about like mid-40s with a mustache and like big square glasses. Looks like he's someone's accountant, and it's just the coolest guy. Like, he's just, and then he's there like flirting with the people. Oh, I think that's a special edition. That's a special edition change was, but Boba Fett, he's like got two girls around him, and he does a little chin touch with one of the, and it's, I think that was another thing that was added. Fun fact.
Oh, just Star Wars is full of all that kind of fun, isn't it? Right. Okay. Favorite planet, moon, or spaceship visited. We've got Tatooine, and obviously we are back there, but this time we get to see Jabba's palace, Death Star 2.0, Dagobah, Endor. I might be missing some, but, favorite one, guys?
I mean obviously the forest moon is beautiful. It's fantastic. It's a great setting for what they're doing. Really brings in a lot of the kind of Vietnam vibes
that
they're going for there. But I will say that the one shot outside of Jabba's palace on Tatooine, that's very highly enhanced. I also watched this on Disney Plus, so the special edition one, and it's very enhanced, but it's a really stunning shot that they hold on for a while because there's a little creature eating another little creature. It's really beautiful though, with the two suns setting behind Jabba's palace. So yeah, Endor, but then also that specific shot of Tatooine.
For me, it's, I mean, I wouldn't call it a planet, but the Death Star 2 is just so iconic. It's just so cool. Like the half built like aesthetic of it.
Yeah.
The way it's just the best. It's just such a cool thing. Like, I don't know how they built it so fast, like when the other one took like 20 years, but fuck it. It's so slavery. That's true, actually. That's true. Oh, Andor though. Can't wait to talk about that.
We'll do Andor for our first proper episode back.
The Death Star 2. I also love Endor. I love the Ewoks. I'm surprised there weren't more like horrible monsters on Endor. I want to see what the little creature that was bait for the net. I want to see what that's like when it's alive. And I also want to see what they were trying to bait to get that. I want to see what that creature was like. Just give me more weird Endor creatures. I guess there are in Caravan of Courage, but I'm not that brave. We're not all that stupid.
Right. Okay. Best minor character. You guys know the stuff better than I do. I've got a few written down here, and you probably know their names and birth dates and stuff. But I've got the Hog Boys in Jabba the Hutt's palace. I've got Freaky Boy with the red eyes and tentacles wrapped around his head. Jabba the Hutt, obviously. Salacious B. Crumb, Blue Boy, Jabba's friend, Elephant Boy. Palpy's Fancy Red Boys, Ewoks, and specifically the Ewok that hits himself with the throwing rocks. I think that might be the one that Leia meets at the start. But any favorite minor character?
I'm sorry. What was that?
Simon describing Star Wars is one of my favorite things.
Fancy boy with the red pants, did you say?
Well, okay, I'll go through them again. So we got the Hog Boys in Jabba the Hutt's palace, right? Yeah, then we got Freaky Boy with red eyes and tentacles wrapped around his head.
Yeah, Bib Fortuna, right?
Yep.
That's the one, Mr. Tuna.
Fun fact about Mr. Tuna. Senor Tuna.
Senor Tuna.
The interesting fact about Bib Fortuna is that in the prequels, he was played by, and also in The Mandalorian when he gets absolutely murdered. I believe I'm gonna Google this and come back to it just in case, but I think he's played by the same person that voices General Grievous, who was, I believe, a sound designer or a sound technician on the prequels, but nothing to do with this film. So completely irrelevant, really.
Love that fact.
Yes.
Yum-num.
Num-num. Okay. Yep. Take your word for it.
Yub-Nub isn't a person.
Could just be describing an American candy for all I know.
I'm pretty sure he's called Yub-Nub.
Yub-Nub is the song at the end. Oh, that's a special edition change that I like, but I'm in two minds massively about it, is they changed the song at the end to a little like instrumental that's just really lovely. And the original is an Ewok song called Yub-Nub.
What's
and it's
the
amazing.
That?
Well, the little baby one. What? A little tiny baby Ewok.
Baby Ewok?
I don't know.
Baby Ewok?
They did a figure of it once and I really wanted it.
It's a very cute baby Ewok.
Walklings! They're called Walklings!
His name's Baby Nippet.
Baby Nippet. Okay, well, my vote goes for Blue Boy with the elephant style in the Jabba's.
Max Rebo is a god. I love Max Rebo. He is wonderful. I'm so glad that he survived, because he's in the Book of Boba Fett in the background, and I absolutely shit my pants. It was fantastic.
Right, okay.
I have a Lego figure of Max Rebo, and it's crazy how much it goes for. It's really scary. He's literally just like a plain blue body and a plain blue legs, and then just like his head that's all elephanty and stuff.
Yep.
And it's amazing.
Steel, did you have a favorite minor character? Sorry, did I just miss that?
I love some of the Ewok names, like Logre and the chief who's called Chief Chirper, and is it Tico? I can't remember all of them. I have them in Lego, because of course I do. No, Tito's from The Force Awakens. But Yeah, I'm trying to think. I got distracted by Baby Nippet, and I can't think of any.
Okay,
you may have to come back to me.
We'll come back to you.
Of course, luckily. Salacious Crumb, obviously.
Obviously, yeah, absolutely.
Salacious Crumb, little Salacious. Rap features boy. Oh, yeah. I've got a fun fact about Salacious Crumb.
Of course.
There's a bit where, you know, the bit where he's on 3PO's face and he's ripping his eye out and stuff. So Anthony Daniels had a panic attack during that scene.
He did.
He'd been C-3PO for 6 years at this point. He'd been in that suit. He'd been in that suit in the desert for the first film, the first time he had to wear the suit. And in those days, it took 2 hours to get the head off. So like,
it's
nightmare fuel. He was in that thing for 8 hours, like shooting, and then it took 2 hours to come off. It was ridiculous. But the first time he ever like really freaked out, he got really severe claustrophobia during the scene where the puppet of Salacious Crumb was on his face, ripping his eye out. And he just got up and went, he wasn't even fully in the suit at this point, but he got up and he was like, I need to get out. 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 And yeah, it's just like all of the films, and that's the thing that got him, was just this weird puppet man just like ripping his fake eye out. And he's just like,
that would be a trippy fucking experience.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It would be absolutely cursed.
Yeah,
absolutely. Right, okay, next category is best use of main character in the series. And this is very much a question mark. Do we think any of the main characters had their sort of best scenes or just best overall arc or representation in this movie? Leia obviously had some stuff to do in this movie, and she does get to have the line of, you know, I love you, I know, the reverse of episode five.
And she also gets to wear a bikini as well.
She's forced to.
Fuck both of you. Don't do that.
So,
Yeah, she's forced to wear the bikini.
Yes.
She is.
By that horrible slug, George Lucas.
Who also had five people puppeting him at all times.
If only. So, yeah, the other question marks I had down were, I mean, Darth is certainly not as cool and doesn't have as much to do on the kind of, you know, just having sort of action scenes as he does in other films, although he does have more of a, you know, he does get to sort of turn it around and have scenes outside of the mask, which is, you know, potentially interesting. And, you know, I guess you could put down whatever Palpatine's doing as a best character moment of the series. Do we think any of the main characters had their best appearance in this film, or do we think it was other films?
So Daddy Palps is amazing in this film, despite your reservations, Simon, your incorrect reservations, but he gets all the best parts in Revenge of the Sith, I think, because he's like the best thing in that film by a country mile.
Yeah.
I really like the Darth Vader stuff in this. It goes from him being the force of nature to him being the victim, which is my favorite sort of portrayal of Vader, is he's in constant pain and everything is shit for him at all times. And I kind of love that. Not like, you know, I feel sorry for him, obviously. I don't love that. I'm not like, yeah. I mean, he did kill children, so, you know. But I think Luke definitely has all the best stuff in this movie.
Do you think this is better than Last Jedi, though? For Luke?
Acting wise, Last Jedi is better. A lot of the stuff in Last Jedi is so good that I don't know, actually.
And like for fulfilling his arc as a character.
That's true. No, I still think the throne room stuff in this movie is better than what he does in Last Jedi. As much as I love the everything he does in Last Jedi, it works so well. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
But I love Luke in this movie. I think he's just amazing, just stone cold badass, but also still the Luke.
One thing that I noticed in this one that caught me off guard a little bit, because I forgot that it happened, was that Luke force chokes the Hog Boys, as you put it, Simon.
Yep,
great name for a band. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah. the force choking. Like, I wasn't expecting that, because he also really looks like Anakin in that moment. Like Mark Hamill looks like Hayden Christensen as he's force choking your man. And like, I feel like if that happened in a Star Wars film from the prequels or the sequels, we would be like, oh, he's on the path to the dark side now. That's what that means, because that's how we associate it now. But I wonder if that was like the intention there, that Luke is blurred, or if it was just he's doing what needs to be done to save Han.
Or maybe they were just doing an 80s where they hadn't like fully.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, was it intentional for some sort of like deeper meaning about the Force and where Luke is within himself and coming to this full realization of his character, tempting Vader back to the light side, but also acknowledging that there's some sort of blur between light and dark? Or was it literally just, this looks cool?
I have an image of George Lucas writing the script and being like, okay, he's a Jedi now. What's something that people do? Oh, what have we got so far? Oh, we got the force choke. Let's do that. That's good.
Can I request that when we next do a deep dive episode, that when you do the opening crawl, can you do it in your George Lucas voice? Because that was very good. Well done, Steel.
This would be the one about taxes as well. Well, taxation of trade routes has been.
I'd also like you to have a very similar shaved beard as well. Try and arrange that.
Have you seen the picture where they've got the picture of George Lucas laughing and then photoshopped his hair and beard?
I've not, but I'm going to have to look that up.
It looks like a cursed egg.
Right, okay. The next category is best death, biggest laugh, or biggest crowd cheer. And I wrote a lot of things down here when I was watching the film last night, and like 70% of the things I've written down are just that they happen in Jabba the Hutt's palace, just because there's so much shit going on from C-3PO. Mm. And most of the things are just C-3PO just being amazing. And it's like, what did he say? This can't be. Arthur, you're playing the wrong message. When he gets upset that Luke is basically saying these droids are a gift for you. We've got robots slash droid torture, which was very harrowing for them, and their feet getting burnt.
Fucked.
Yeah.
That droid, the one that assigns 3PO and R2 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I love that droid so much. The way his mouth moves. I love how skinny he is. I saw it in... Stop laughing, Vaughn. I went to the Star Wars Identities exhibition at the O2 years ago, and I saw there was so much there. And the stuff that got me the most was, weirdly, him. I really freaked out seeing him and the Carbonite and Leia's bikini and some other things. I just saw it, and I was just like, this is insane. I can't believe I'm looking at this. But that droid, for some reason, it's such a like random side character thing. But that droid was there, and the one that gets torn, like ripped up, that was there as well. It's just amazing.
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that's most interesting about the film, rewatching it, was just how much they do with like puppets and robots and, you know, everything else that's going on. Like the first, I don't know, 40 minutes or whatever it is, there's just so many characters going on. And it's fascinating to think about how much effort and love was put into to create those characters. Now enduring, they still are. So yeah,
I feel like the Mos Eisley Cantina from the first film is such a huge thing. Seeing all the different aliens and the scum and villainy and all that they wanted that again in this film. And yeah,
that's a good call.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me. We're talking about special effects and characters and Jabba and all that. That reminded me that George Lucas originally wanted the Rancor to be a guy in a suit.
Really?
And they tried it all sorts of ways. And it just didn't work. Like, they tried making the costume, and there's some like screen test footage of the guy in the costume, and it's kind of half finished, and they haven't colored in. They've colored in the head and the snapping jaw, but they haven't colored in the rest of the pieces, and they're bright orange, and it's really strange. But yeah, it's very interesting. And then after that, they were like, well, we tried that didn't work. So we made it a high speed frame puppet, that shot on like a high frame rate camera, but, it's a hand puppet. And it's incredible. Mm. I just love that, the idea that the Rancor, that massive creature, is a hand puppet. Just amazing.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't go that route. I'd be worried it would look a little bit like some of the sort of alien monsters that appeared in the original Star Trek series. That,
oh, so good though. So terrible. That dog, that little dog that they give a little horn to.
There's a green Star Trek character who just looks like he's like wearing washing up gloves when he's just sort of marching about.
Probably is. That's another fun fact, actually. Bosk from, I might have said this the other week. I say the other week, it was months ago. But Bosk, the Trandoshan bounty hunter, his outfit, his yellow flight suit, was they just took it from an episode of Doctor Who. Like, they were filming it.
Oh,
it was
on, there you go.
They just took that. It's very strange, the idea that Star Wars used something from low budget Doctor Who. Like, it's wild, that idea.
Yeah.
While we're on the subject of Jabba again, the Jabba suit had, it was either 5 or 6 people inside.
Yeah.
And the tail was manned by a little person who was moving the tail, and that poor guy actually was stood on by Carrie Fisher. That poor guy had when Carrie Fisher runs round and strangles Jabba, stood on this poor guy's head, and so they just fashioned a piece of foam that he had on his head the next time, and that's amazing. And the Jabba costume has fallen apart and just disintegrated over time, but the eyes have survived. Jabba's eyes were their own remote control piece. And that's another thing that I saw at the Star Wars Identities exhibition, and it's just crazy seeing them. It's just it's the only thing that survived. The rest just kind of fell apart.
Right, I'll run through. I've got a few more listed down, and you guys can fill in anything I've not got here. So much to go through. There's a great C-3PO line where he goes, "At last, Master Skywalker has come to rescue me," which is really funny. The thought that. That's what the plan was, just to rescue C-3PO. We've got Luke failing to use his mind tricks on Jabba, which is quite amusing. One of our hog boys being eaten by Rancor there. The guy crying over the death of the Rancor, like the big shirtless guy who kind of comes in.
Keeper. Yeah, put some respect on his name.
And he's just like, oh, my
so
son.
So good.
He definitely...
Speaking of Rancor deaths, a little fun fact for you. There's one of the slave dancers in Jabba's palace, Ula, the green Twi'lek, who dropped in. She gets dropped into the Sarlacc pit. Not Sarlacc pit. She gets dropped into the Rancor pit. So many pits. Jabba's got so many pits. She gets dropped in. And that's the last you see of her in the original cut of the film. And George wanted to put in a new scene of her, so you get a reaction shot of her seeing the gate of the Rancor open. Mm-hmm. And you don't see the Rancor then, but it's just to build tension. And so what they did was they brought the actress who played Ula back in 1996, and she looked exactly the same.
Wow.
She kept fit, that girl. Yeah. There was an interview with her done by a guy who interviewed some of the lesser-known actors of Star Wars. He also did one with Greedo and one with Brian Blessed, who voices Boss Nass, and one with Ahmed Best, where he made him do some Darth Jar Jar lines, which is great. But she's really proud of the fact that she looks so good in the scene shot 13 years later.
I mean, yeah, good for her, as you say. A couple more had down around this time as well. There's the not so subtle head nod between Luke and Lando when they're about to do the big escape scene. Not sure how they didn't give themselves away there. Got Han accidentally killing Boba Fett, which looked like something from a Carry On film. Leia choking Jabba to death. As you mentioned at the start, Steel Luke just absolutely murdering all those guys on the ship when they're escaping. He just absolutely cuts them down.
Just chopping wood.
Yeah, I mean, just going through them. R2-D2 electrocuting our rat boy. C-3PO being upside down in the sand when he's rescued. Yoda's body disappearing. I completely forgot about that. That they just
the bit where the bit where the little blanket drops. Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
The return of Obi-Wan, yay, I put down, which is always...
The bit where the ghost... the bit where the ghost sits down on a log.
And then I've got the what I told you was true from a certain point of view, and I wrote down, we love a good...
I lied.
We love a good Obi-Wan bullshit. It's, Stormtroopers...
That is such a heavy bit of bullshit. I love that the follow-up line is, Luke, you must understand that some of the truths we cling to, it's all about our... the way we perceive them. And it's like, dude, all right, just stop. Okay, stop gaslighting this person.
I've got stormtroopers flying into trees on Endor. That is just endless fun all throughout. Probably my favorite moment in the film, now, especially now I've read about it, is Palpy's little twirly chair when he's in the Death Star. And from reading online, it said that the mechanism that was supposed to twirl him around was broken, so Ian McDiarmid actually had to do like little feet movements, like to sort of move himself around. So which is just a beautiful image of him not having it working, yeah. And his little feet just twirling himself around.
I like to think it's like a little kid on their dad's office chair.
Yes, exactly that.
He's too short for the chair, so he's on his toes doing it.
Beautiful. I'd say, although I gave Palpatine some shit for that, his twirly chair is probably reason enough for him to be in this film. That was great. It's not quite as good as the egg that we get in episode 5.
I was going to say, this is like Simon and Vader's egg.
Yes, exactly.
We really love Vader's egg.
We do love Vader's egg. That is truly the high point of Star Wars for me. I've got Chewie getting them captured by the net because he can't resist the meat trap. C-3PO being seen as a god by the Ewoks. The not great acting scene between Leia and Han after find out she's related to Luke. Palpy thinking he knows everything and mocking Luke. That was pretty funny. This is no time for heroics, as C-3PO, while everyone around him is being heroic at the exact time they should be being heroic. Han Solo's cheeky shrug after they capture the base, which was great. Palpy's blue sparkles I've got written down here, which special powers for him. Palpatine's death. My favorite death is probably actually the pilot who screams before his ship goes into the Star Destroyer, before it sort of crashes. Yes. Which is just a great, like, I'm gonna crash scene. And then I've got lastly noted down, when things have gone tits up, no one on the Death Star cares that Luke and Darth are having a moment. Everyone else is just running for safety, which I think is quite apt that they don't care what their boss is up to. Have I missed anything there, guys? Or
yes.
There's a great moment in a Robot Chicken sketch where he takes Vader's helmet off and then there's a guy running past and he just takes a photo with his flip phone.
The absolute funniest part of this film is when Luke is dragging Vader's lifeless body. It's so funny. Like, I rewound it to watch it again because it's just so good. The whole body language posturing in that scene is fantastic.
That reminds me of a cutscene in the Lego, in the old Lego games, where just after that happens and Luke gets on the shuttle, and then the door of the shuttle closes, and Vader's still on the ramp and he's just going up with the door. Funny.
There's a lot in this film. I really enjoyed watching this film again yesterday. It was absolutely fantastic, and just so many little funny moments, intentional or not, that were just brilliant. Okay, anything else to add, or should we try and get through the last few categories?
I love the bit where Princess Leia gives the little Ewok Wicket a little snack. So sweet. And he sniffs it before he eats it.
Yeah, he does.
You better believe I reenacted that with my mum when I was 3.
Bless you, Steel.
I know. Oh, I got another, while we're on the subject of Wicket, I have another fun fact. Wicket was originally supposed to be played by Kenny Baker, who drives R2-D2, but he had food poisoning. So Warwick Davis, who was, I think he was like 9 at the 11. time, 11, he was 11 at the time, played him, and I think that's just amazing. Like, it's amazing how these things happen because of food poisoning. It's like it's like when Indiana Jones shoots the swordsman. That happened only because Indiana Jones had Harrison Ford. I think he had the shits. And so he was just like, I can't do this fight scene anymore. And then Spielberg was just like, just shoot the damn guy, all right? It's fine.
Right, okay. We probably could just name favorite moments of the whole film, to be honest. But we probably should try and keep this.
Simon, you already did that.
Move as long as true.
I did twice now.
Absolutely. Well, you know, unlike you guys, I really like this film. So I'm just trying to spread some enthusiasm.
Fighting words. Well, we've seen more Star Wars films than you. So I guess we just have more critiques.
That's true. You guys have seen more Star Wars.
I will let you talk on this one before we get to the prequels, which you've never seen in your life.
It's true. I haven't. It's true. Did you guys see, just to completely change the subject, did you guys see episode one in the cinemas?
I was 1 year old.
So that's a no. Okay, so we have established that I am the true prequel fan out of us. I mean, I haven't technically seen all the way through of episode three, but if we put that to one side.
You've never seen any of them. Continue. What's the next category?
Oh, wait. No, sorry. Don't continue. That reminds me.
Oh, jeez.
So they're talking about watching the prequels in cinemas. I saw... So I found out that Revenge of the Sith was going to be a 12, and I didn't realize that 12A was a thing, or it didn't say 12A specifically. And I got so upset after I read about that I cried while reading this like little bit about Star Wars Revenge of the Sith that my mum had saved from the paper. And
you really are a big cutie pie, Steve.
I am adorable.
Okay. The next category is how cute is Steel? No, that's just a fact. That is 10 out of 10. The next category is best use of music in the film. There's a few written down here. I've got four, which are all the funky music that the aliens are dancing to in Jabba's palace.
That song that they put in the special edition, yes. I really hate it. I can't stand it.
So obviously added on, it's that was an interesting watch.
Why are there so many like alien mouths in the camera? There's
so many right there, right in your face. It's
right there.
I don't need that.
I don't want to see the little dangly thing at the back of the throat hanging from this alien's mouth.
I mean, at least the only thing I can take from a positive point of view is that visually it does sort of having all that shit on screen does at least tie the trilogy more up to the prequel trilogy. Like, I can sort of visually connect that and the prequel nonsense now a lot more with all the just general goobga going on with the special edition nonsense. But
yes, it makes it a more cohesive set of
films. Yes, that's definitely what he was going for, cohesive. I've got the music playing when the desert escape happens. My favorite is actually the music playing when Luke is fighting Darth before we actually get to the Darth's hand being cut off. There's a, I don't know if it's like 30-second period where there's some really cool, I don't know if it's like chanting or some sort of music that's getting played, but watching that last night, I thought that was really effective. And then the music
that's
playing.
That's the bit. I think that's the bit I was talking about earlier where I was just like, that piece of music just hits me.
Like, yeah, I that wasn't one I was familiar with. Like, just as I could have told you that was a Star Wars thing. And just watching that last night, I was like, oh, that's really effective. That's really well done. And then the music playing during the galaxy celebrations. I've obviously left a lot of stuff out. But any favorites from your perspective, guys?
The big orchestral hit when the second Death Star, not when it explodes, but when the Falcon escapes the fire and it just has that big boom, and it's just, oh, amazing. And then you have Lando screaming and like with happiness, and it's just, oh, so good. It's just such a brilliant moment. That whole sequence, it's really hard to top the original Death Star sequence, but like flying inside it and having to dodge all that is just amazing. And the fact that it's Wedge and Lando in the Falcon and the X-Wing, just brilliant. I love it so much.
Vaughn, you've made it as a point on record that you don't like any of the music from Star Wars. Were you able to suffer through this viewing okay?
Yeah, I fucking... I'm not going to finish that sentence. I love Star Wars music so much. I love John Williams. He's perfect. I love the Ewok music, not the celebration. Well, also the celebration, but just like the adorable little song that's playing while the Ewoks are just walking around doing stuff. It's so cute. It's really wonderful.
I think we should try and get that music played for you whenever you just walk around the house.
I would love that. I would love that so much if I was just constantly playing while I'm just like doing my stupid little tasks. I would love it.
Great. The
stupid little tasks like writing a thesis.
Yes.
Doing a PhD, whatever.
Anyway, Christmas.
It's just really great.
It really is. Okay, the next category is best line of dialogue. I've got a few down here. First, I just wrote anything that C-3PO says because it's absolutely hilarious. Then a few more. I've got, he's more machine now than man. His mind is twisted. Not bad for a little furball. I love you, I know, with the reverse of the characters in episode 5. And it's a trap. Anything else you'd like to call out here?
I love the 3PO line where he's once again, I love the lines where 3PO is telling R2 something like, don't do that, what are you doing? And then he's like, you did it. But in this one, he's like, this isn't time for heroics. And then when R2 gets shot, it's like, R2, why did you have to be so brave? Brilliant. And one of my favorite lines, which is actually like, I think the best Harrison Ford line in this movie is when Luke says, they're on Tatooine and they're just going to the Sarlacc pit. And he's like, I was born here, you know? And he's like, you're going to die here. Convenient.
Yes. That line really did stick out to me last night as well.
And I think one of my favorite bits, I used to love it as a kid, is when Han's reunited with Chewie in the prison in Jabba's palace. And he's just stroking his hair and he's like, all right, pal. So sweet. Mm-hmm. And this is where he says, a Jedi Knight. I go away for 1 minute and everyone's getting delusions of grandeur. Oh, brilliant.
Vaughn, any from yourself?
I am a Jedi like my father before me. That's great. Classic line. And also, you rebel scum.
That guy.
Love it. Love it so much. Do the voice.
You rebel scum. There's a deleted scene of that. It just carries on. That take carries on, and Harrison Ford just goes, scum. It's so funny. Also, everything Palpatine says is pure gold. Mm. Some of my favorites are,
send the fleet to the far side of Endor. Let it will stay.
It's amazing. And it's you that is mistaken about a great many things. So good. I think
I sound like such an incel.
He's such an incel. He is. Palpatine gets no bitches.
Somehow.
Well, we know that he fucks, so that is...
It reminds me of a Robot Chicken line where Darth Vader's like, God, his teeth are so yellow. But I guess when you've got a face like a melted candle, flossing must be like pissing in the wind.
Right. It's hard to top that. But the next category is best outfit, costume, or character design. Now, this is basically the same list as I came up with the side characters, apart from Leia's bikini, which became iconic, even if not for good reasons. So, just the list I had was the hog boys in Jabba the Hutt's palace, freaky boy with red eyes and tentacles wrapped around his head, Jabba the Hutt, Salacious B. Crumb, blue boy, otherwise known as Space Elephant, which is what we came up with the name from, Palpa's red fantasy boys, and of course the Ewoks. Any character designs or outfits you guys want to call it?
Luke in his Chanel boots. At the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah, he looks fierce.
He looks so good. It's like billowy kind of shirt and it's just all like jet black. God, he looks so good.
Nice little bit of costume storytelling. Luke wearing his little flight suit that he's got, and it's all black, and he's fighting Vader. And then after his confrontation with the Emperor, it just comes undone at the top, and there's a little white bit that appears, and it's just a nice little bit of storytelling. Like, is he going to turn to the dark side? No, of course not. You know, I love that. There was another one. Oh, yes. My favorite Princess Leia outfit is in this movie, and it's her Endor, the one she wears for Endor, but not the poncho and the helmet, but the uniform she's got under that. Looks amazing in it. There's a great picture of her with her blaster in that outfit, and it's just amazing. It's just a really, really good costume. I wish it had more time.
There's a lot of good design, especially around the creatures in this, but also, as you say, some of the specific costume choices are excellent as well. We're nearing the end, guys. We're getting closer. The next category I have is trivia and random research. There's a lot we could go into here. You guys, of course, will be familiar with the Clone Wars season 5 episodes 11 to 13, where we find out that Dagobah has a lot of Sith energy, and that's why Yoda chose to stay there because it would mask him. That's just something I naturally know isn't something that Ebba found out by googling yesterday and told me before the podcast. So yeah, we've got Admiral Ackbar's famous line of "It's a trap" was originally scripted as "It's a trick," and the line was changed in post-production after a negative test screening. All these ones here I'm getting from IMDb trivia, so this could all be nonsense, but we'll take this at face value. I've also got the word Ewok is never spoken in the movie, and I've also got after appearing in this movie, Wedge Antilles became the only X-Wing pilot character apart from Luke who survived all three movies. Any more from yourself, guys?
You know, I think I've managed to put in all of mine, apart from when they were falling into the Sarlacc pit, like all the stunt guys that played the baddies that got pushed into the Sarlacc pit. Basically, the guy who went in first, he was like the stunt coordinator, and he went in and just got a bunch of sand up his nose and in his ears and in his eyes when he went down. So he told everyone when he was going down, he was like, just put some cotton wool in your nose and your ears, and just close your eyes and close your mouth as you go down. Just trust me on this. And also, they could only send them down one at a time. So every time you see someone fall into the Sarlacc pit in the movie, imagine that someone is then pulling them out with a little crane before another person goes in. So the guy said in the interview for the Empire of Dreams documentary, saying about, you know, you got the action scene happening, but this was a comedy all in its own, just watching people go in and out of this pit and get being pulled out afterwards.
Vaughn, anything to add, or shall we move on?
The only one is one that you mentioned earlier that I just, every time I hear it, it makes me think so much, because like Lucas approached David Lynch to direct this film. Could you imagine what a David Lynch like Star Wars film would look like if George had backed off and just let him do his own thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Same with Cronenberg as well.
And I want him. Yeah. Like those are some choices for director, and I'm very curious what the alternate world, alternate universe version of these films are.
Yeah, absolutely.
A Star Wars, that would have been wild.
It would have been fascinating as well, wouldn't it? And how deep he would have gone into, you know, the lore, and you know, if he'd just seen as a gig, or you know, whether it's something he would have fully committed to. Yeah, fascinating. The next category is worst internet theories about this movie. I did have a Google around. There wasn't a whole lot that initially popped up. The only stuff that was really kind of coming up was more specifically around the Ewoks and them, you know, as you mentioned earlier, around killing and possibly eating the stormtroopers. And there's like a Mark Hamill tweet from a few years back, which was him responding to a meme, which was in Return of the Jedi, how could the Ewoks have a dress that fits Leia unless they cooked and ate a woman her size? And Mark Hamill replied, I'm trying not to think about it. I don't know if you guys found anything else on that, or if you want to comment on our little cannibal Ewoks.
I don't think there are that many, weirdly, I don't think there are that many fan theories or just takes about Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. The one about the Ewoks being, they wouldn't be cannibals because they're not humans.
Yeah.
But
there's eating sentient beings.
Yeah, they're carnivores, but I think that's just kind of widely accepted. It's like, yeah, that's what they do. They eat stormtroopers and it's badass as fuck because they're adorable little creatures who straight up murder and eat stormtroopers.
But they do it.
They're actually the best of us. They're the best rebels. If you really think about it.
Although they are easily tricked by floating gold men. So,
And their babies are named Walklings. They're little tiny Ewok babies.
Very cute. Okay, the next category is all about Vaughn, which is, which wine would you pair with this film? Mm.
I had a good think about this, and I'm cheating a little bit because it is a fortified wine.
Ooh.
But I would say a ruby port. And my reasoning for that is because it's kind of a syrupy thickness to it that's just comforting and warm as you drink it. And then there are special notes afterwards, depending on the one that you get, but there's a bit of sweetness to it right in the end. So it can be bitter at your first taste on your tongue, but then almost always fortified wine, especially a ruby port, is going to have a bit of sweetness in the aftertaste and in the mouthfeel. And I think that really is how Return of the Jedi feels to me, and like how it closes out the trilogy.
Mm.
Like a little warm blanket that ends with like a, I'm so happy I watched that every single time.
Also, I can imagine Palpatine only drinks fortified wines.
Just... No, Palpatine drinks sherry.
Yes.
And only sherry.
That's why he's got the wrinkles. It's his cheeks from when he's drinking the sherry.
Oh, beautiful. Well, thank you, guys. I mean, I couldn't have thought of that wine selection, of course. So thank you, Vaughn, for your expert knowledge on that. Yeah. We've got a couple of categories left before we finish up, and then we'll probably just have a quick general chat just to finish things up. The next, which was, what should the tagline of this movie be? I'm not sure if these are really taglines as such, but the two that I had watching the film were Death Star 2, same structural design flaws before, and dark side recruitment methods, not a hit with baby boomers. So yeah, looking at what they were able to do in recruiting Anakin, that was successful, but Mark Hamill's character, who is Mark Hamill being a baby boomer, they were not able to seduce him the same way. So yeah, no luck on the dark side recruitment there. Any ideas on what the tagline of this movie should be, guys?
Yeah, just a poster where it's just Palpatine and the tagline is, like it or not, this is peak male physical performance.
Yes.
And unless you know, want someone who can wriggle out of being picked up and thrown down a well. But outside but of
like under his cloak, he's like shredded, right?
Oh yeah, he is. He's got ripped.
Like the like kind of ball sack face. Shredded underneath.
He's got the ball sack face, but his ball sack, he's got face ball sack.
Vaughn, any thoughts on a tagline?
No. I'm not good at these ones.
It's okay. You've done enough thinking today, as it is.
I spent a lot of time thinking about the port.
You did. You really did. Okay, lasting impressions of the film. I just had Palpy sucks and Ewoks rock. I don't know about you.
You suck. You suck, Simon.
I honestly can't believe how much you dislike Palpatine in this film.
I just watching the film, he just kind of floated in, didn't do very much, and got thrown in a well. And I just I don't know, maybe they just didn't give him enough to do. And I'm not criticizing the performance as such, because I don't think there was a lot he could do with the time he had, but he was just, I don't know, just, yes, everything is going to plan. And then he just sort of sat there, and no matter what happened, he was like, yes, this is exactly, you know, like this. I just imagine him like ordering food online and then like them going, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have half the stuff. It's all like substituted stuff. And he's like, yes, this is exactly what I planned. I wanted these substitutions. And you go, okay, Poppy, if you're sure, like no matter what was happening, he was like, yes, we are stuck in traffic. This is exactly what I planned. I was like, okay, but thanks. That's a really good character to have in this
one. Everything that's happened on the A34 has happened under my design.
a power cut just as I wanted. Yes, thanks. Thanks, Poppy.
Good. Get the candles.
Also, like how everything was his design. So does that include like the Death Star 2 having the exact same structural floor plan, like as the original?
No. It doesn't. The Death Star 2, the flaw in that one is that it's not finished yet.
But yeah, that's
the flaw.
That's the flaw.
It's okay. Like structural floor.
Half a fucking thing.
Okay. Lasting impressions of the film, other than the fact that you just love suckling at the teat of Palpy.
Honestly, them teats.
Like, I wish.
Vaughn is available for many types of different podcasts, ladies and gentlemen. She is a professional, and you don't have to bring up what she just said.
God, why do I talk? I love this movie. I think it's really great. My lasting impression is...
Well, I'm glad we brought you here for such cutting cultural analysis.
My God, I hate you so much. I'm really thrown by the fact that you hate Palpatine, and I'm trying to put it to the side. I really enjoy this film. I think it closes out the trilogy really well. I think the fact that a lot of it mirrors other things that happened earlier in the trilogy... Mm-hmm. It's a trap is also a throwback to Empire. Leia screams it's a trap in Cloud City. And like there are just kind of echoes that they
were. It's like poetry, it rhymes.
but it's those through lines that draw parallels between the three films and make it feel like a cohesive trilogy. You get closure at the end of it. It's a great film. I will say one thing, though, that I was thinking this time around watching it is that Rey gets a lot of shit for just picking up the Force as she does and like training with Luke and whatever in the sequels. But
yep.
Everybody feels like, oh, she can just do everything immediately. But Luke really does everything immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not that much time that passes. As you said earlier, Simon, from the first film to the last film, within the universe, it's really not that long. And he's out here, like, fucking up Darth Vader. Like, he really progresses very quickly, force choking people and using Jedi mind tricks almost immediately, like... Yeah. Even in the fourth,
I was gonna
film.
Say it's almost as if the people who hate on Rey for that type of thing have some sort of weird obsession with women being able to do things in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, no, definitely that. Definitely that.
That's a hot take. I've never heard that.
I'm in great fucking critical analysis. But yeah. I also think that it's a it's that this was like the established thing. This was the original, so they could do whatever they wanted. They could have Luke force choking someone and we're not going to question it as much. But if it's happening now with all of the context that we have in the 21st century and all of the expectations that we have, people are going to be shittier about it. And with social media and everything. But I do think that if Rey is a Mary Sue, then so is Luke. And I'm fine with that. I love that. I think it's great. But that was a lasting impression that I had this watch through.
So I with the whole Rey thing, I never use Luke as an argument because I feel a little differently about Luke. I feel like he is bad at it in Empire and he gets his ass kicked and then he's taken like the time because it's like a couple of years after after Empire when Jedi is set, but that's still, you know, he still becomes a fully fledged Jedi in a short amount of time. But like I always say Anakin, and we'll get into this when we do Phantom Menace, but I always say like Anakin is just knows, like, he's a little kid, you know, and it's you know, he flies a Naboo starfighter, and there's lots of other things
murders
that happen.
Millions of people. Murders so many people.
There's a lot of people. Well, Luke does that as well, to be honest. Luke kills a whole lot of people.
But he's doing a lot of murders.
Lots of murders. But yeah, I never use Luke as an argument for that in particular, because I think like he has a much clearer like journey. But that's because and once again, we'll get into this when we do Force Awakens, like Rey is like her character arc isn't becoming learning how to use the Force and learning how to fight. Like, she already knew how to fight, and the Force comes fairly naturally to her. Like, that's fine. There are people that are naturals at things. That's fine. Her story arc is something different. And yeah, I feel like if Rey was a male character, they wouldn't have the same problem.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Right. I think that brings us pretty nicely to the end of the categories. We've covered a fair bit, not just on this film, but just in Star Wars in general, as we tend to do. Is there anything we want to discuss or quickly mention before we close up on this episode about episode 6? Anything that we've not touched upon, which we feel we need to get off our chests?
Yeah, sorry, you don't like Palpatine in this movie.
Yeah, mate, the fuck is that?
I know, it's almost like I watched the film and was disappointed by a character. It's weird. That's
But how?
There's one thing that happens that I laughed when I watched it this time. Luke says to Vader, "Your thoughts betray you." And then a couple minutes later, Vader says to Luke, "Your thoughts betray you," but he doesn't say it in a way of like, "You just said this and I'm saying it back." He says it as though it's his original line, and it's really funny. it's just really funny to not acknowledge that this person just said that to you, and you're trying to say it like you're the clever one. You know what I mean?
That does seem very Anakin, to be honest.
It does. It does indeed. It's really good. I like it a lot.
Anything else, or can we finish up there? I mean, I could go into Palpatine further, but like I say, I think I've explained that I think he's a character, from what I've seen, is actually more interesting in the prequels, and I don't think he's just given very much to do in this film, apart from just twiddle his feet as he turns a chair, which I did like.
It's incredible.
That is great.
Okay, well, I guess that closes up our return to the joy of Star Wars, which has been long overdue. And yeah, it's been so much fun talking with you guys again. You guys know so much and have such a passion for Star Wars. It's so enjoyable for me to talk with you guys. So yeah, thanks again for agreeing to do this show with me. It's fantastic.
It's been fine for me. I talk to you all the time, Simon.
You do.
Really grating.
What our audience don't know is just how much Vaughn likes me and how much she enjoys spending time with me, and how she's onto her third podcast with me because of how much she likes me.
Oh, so. I went out of my way to take two trains, like 5 or 6 hours, to go watch your cat while you were away.
The main incentive there was the cat rather than... Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
Such fashionable ties.
Steele, it's lovely to speak to you again. Your acting talents are well, they're appreciated, but I also think that they're wasted. And I think when there is another Star Wars film that comes out, you must audition, because your skills are, they must go beyond this show.
I appreciate that, even if today it was an impression of a character that you don't like. So
you mean George Lucas?
Exactly. No, I mean the villain of this piece.
You mean George Lucas?
Poor George.
He's doing fine. I promise you.
He's doing fine.
No, I mean the villain of the story that took something that was beautiful and perfect and twisted it to
Yoda. Yes,
with his control.
Okay. Well, I can only apologize. Maybe I'll watch Palpatine again in episode 6 and have a different thought now after your glowing response about how good a character he is. But yes, I have to say I was a little disappointed that he didn't have much to do apart from twirl his feet, but there we go. Okay, we should probably close up there then.
If we ever get onto episode 9 and we end up talking about... See, that's a film where I think Palpatine does nothing and just kind of fucks around for the entire film. He's just, and I just feel like it is different. It is different here. Like, it was also the first time they did a throne room scene. Mm-hmm. Which there's been like 4 now.
Yes. Although he does podcast in episode 9. He doesn't do any of that in episode 6. So.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't do that.
He does no Squarespace adverts. So how good can he be?
This podcast is sponsored by Audible.com. Get a free audio book.
Beautiful. Okay.
That's how he funded the second Death Star. In all of his ads.
If you zoomed in really close, you could see the Audible and Squarespace adverts on the side of the Death Star.
Just flying his fleet through the skies of a planet that he's dominating, and it just says, "This fleet has been sponsored by Raid Shadow Legends."
Hello Fresh.
Hello Fresh.
Beautiful. Okay, we should probably close up there before this goes any further. Thanks, guys. This has been a lot of fun, and we'll try and have another episode out before 6-month period expires. We have some more episodes lined up, so look out for those. From Vaughn, from Steele, and from myself, Simon, and from Big Daddy Pulps, thank you very much for listening, and speak to you soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
The Emperor, though.